Welcome to the podcast. I'm Angela Beaubier, and this is Life in the Talbot Settlement, brought to you by Tyrconnell Heritage Society and Backus Page House Museum. In this series, we will do our best to give you a full appreciation of the history of Western Elgin County in southwestern Ontario, from First Nations through the original European settlers to the 1950s. I'll cover one topic per episode, with the first eight setting the tone for who we are, where we are, and what we do here at Backus Page House Museum. Please follow us on all social media by searching at Backus Page House, spelt BACKUSPAGEHOUSE. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Today we're going to go on a tour of vanished villages of Aldeboro Township, now the municipality of West Elgin. In an area like this with such a long history, there are bound to be many towns which at one time were prosperous little communities keeping the settlement running. Though like most things, as years progressed, these towns dwindled in numbers, leaving behind stories of once bustling towns. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge funding from the Department of Canadian Heritage and Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Backus Page House Museum. The first town we will be talking about is the little town of Churchville. Not much is known about the corner settlement on the Kerr Side Road in Aldeboro. Churchville got its name from Philip Schmaltz, a bailiff. At that point in time, there were three churches and three cemeteries located at the crossroads of the 11th Concession and the Kerr Side Road. Because of this, the fitting name of Churchville arose. The settlers who took up land therein arrived in the late 1840s. They were of Lutheran and Evangelical denominations. Later, Roman Catholics arrived. It was only natural for each denomination to want their own house of worship. This resulted in the building of three separate churches with cemeteries. In 1869, a sawmill was erected on Lot 12 on the north side of Middle Street. In 1874, the first school in the area was built on the Robert Kerr Farm at the corner of Silver Clay and Kerr Road. Prior to the building of the schoolhouse in Churchville, children had to walk several miles to attend school. The first teacher was Ada Lugston. At around the same time, a cheese factory was built at Kerr Road and Talbot Line. Another business in the area at that time was a brick factory. Now located east of Kerr Road and Middle Street, the brick factory was owned by Wendell and Schneckenberger. The first bricks from the yard were used to build the first brick house of the area, which was owned by Squire Archibald Thompson, also just east of the Kerr Road. Between the years 1870 and 1880, Frederick Stribe and his family, who resided on the southeast quarter of Lot 11, Concession 10, Middle Street, made their living by making all kinds of crocks out of clay by hand. The clay was dug out of a bank on the farm, and sometimes out of a hill alongside the road. The clay was then put into a self-made grinder, propelled by teams of horses. With the help of his wife, Mr. Stribe would leave early in the morning, calling at all the towns within a radius of 30 miles. Each trip took 2 days. His wares consisted of crocks of assorted sizes, jugs of many designs, and flat milk dishes used for skimming cream used in churning. Now the next vanished village is Fern Dell. It was a small community that came into existence in the 1880s. It grew around a school that was built on a portion of Lot 15 in 1887. This community was located northeast of Rodney on what is now Elgin County Road 9, and the school was erected by William Hain, who purchased the old McNeil homestead. When William built the school, his wife named the area Fern Dell because of, you guessed it, the profusion of ferns. And the first teacher there was Elizabeth McDermott, who received a salary of, wait for this, $250 per annum and boarded at the school for $1.50 per week. The school was used for 78 years, closing in 1965 and then removed from the site. The school was also used as social and religious meeting places for many years. Now let's move on and talk about Taylor. Little remains of what was once the busy town of Taylor. Before the coming of the Canadian Southern Railway in 1870s, Taylor was the location of two stave mills. A stave mill produces the narrow strips of wood that compose the sides of barrels, and I suggest going back to the episode all about mills if you want to find out more. But the men hauled their products by wagon to Port Glasgow, where they were then shipped out. The railway soon realized this place was important as a fueling stop for the wood-burning locomotives and as a source of gravel and fill for the construction of the railroad beds. Gravel was taken from the ridge at Taylor, and the railway built a station house on the Lalonde farm, and this was used until a station was then built at Muirkirk, named after the president of the Canadian Southern Company, Mr. Muir. When big locomotives and express units were brought in, a system was designed to pick up water while the steam engine was still in motion. Long pans were installed between the tracks so water could be scooped up as the engine went by. A pumping station was built to keep these pans filled. It was placed under the management of William Nicholson and assisted by H. Kutch and R. Stickler. This innovative system was used until the introduction of the diesel locomotive. At its peak, Taylor had a general store, but when the railway shifted to Muirkirk, the town started to fizzle out. For many years, mail was picked up at Taylor for Kintyre. Some say this mail service terminated around 1914. Speaking of Kintyre, let's chat about that little town next. Kintyre was located northwest of Rodney, and the town was centered around a church on the southeast corner of Concession 4 and Black's Lane. Before the establishment of the church, settlers would have to travel many miles by foot to attend their services in New Glasgow. This was from 1824 to 1847. Now by 1847, Reverend Duncan MacMillan was called upon to take over the pastorate, and services were held in the old SS No. 8 school. The school was known by the townspeople as Maple Grove School and was located north of Rodney. The school was replaced by a brick school, which was destroyed by fire in 1944 and rebuilt a couple years later. All the church services were held here until John Scott built an edifice in 1861. In 1873, the congregation split up, enabling the Kintyre congregation to select their own minister. It was at this time the manse was built south of the church on Black's Lane. 6 years later, this manse would be destroyed by fire, but later rebuilt. Now we move on to Creenan. The town of Creenan was settled mainly by Scotch and German settlers. A greater percentage were Scottish, who arrived in Canada shortly after the separation of church and state in 1843. Creenan was named by Peter MacNeill, one of the early settlers, after his hometown in Scotland. As time progressed, the need for a school and a church became urgent. The settlers built a log school on Lot 21, Concession 1, in 1855. In this building, the first religious ceremonies were also held. In 1860, the people of Wardsville and Creenan united to form one congregation. The original Argyle Church was built in Creenan the following year. Reverend Neil MacKinnon became the first minister. Sunday school was held even before the church was built, the first being held in 1857. The church was eventually remodeled in 1885. The manse was built in 1872 and was located on Concession 2. The manse was sold in 1903. On June 4, 1859, the Creenan Post Office opened with Duncan MacIntyre, who was also a tailor, appointed as the postmaster. It was located on Lot 19, Concession 1. 108 years later, the office would close. Mail would come from Wardsville. During the winter, if roads became exceedingly bad, Duncan had to occasionally carry the mail on his back and travel the long distances. When Duncan died in 1889, his son John took over. During this time, the mail was picked up from Dutton 3 times a week. By World War I, the office had moved further down Concession 1. In 1906, the business section of Creenan consisted of a blacksmith shop, a general store, the tailor shop, and a cheese factory. The cheese factory was first established in 1873 by R.S. MacMillan. The blacksmith shop was operated by A. Young, and the shoemaker was Donald McCall. The children of Creenan had to first attend school on the northeast side of the Thames River in Eckford Township. Records do not state how the children crossed the river. Settlers had to ford the Thames for several years before the wooden bridge was built. It is logical to assume the children crossed by footbridge. Once the children crossed, they had to walk blazed trails as roads were non-existent. A school was built close to Greenan on Lot 21, Concession 1, in 1855. The first teacher was Jane Grant. In 1864, a new frame school was built on Lot 21, Concession 2, built to serve the area between Concessions 1 and 7. The school did not become a free school until 1865. Previous to that, parents would have to pay for their children to attend. In 1872, the school was moved to the present site north of Creenan. In 1890, this school was then replaced by a brick school. Since then, it's been converted into a house. One extremely exciting town advance was the first threshing machine. The machine was run by horse and was used by Peter D. McCollum before 1867. Now let's take a quick break for a commercial.
Support your local museum by donating today. To meet the Tyrconnell Heritage Society's mandate, Backus Page House Museum raises approximately 50% of its annual funding. Donations are greatly appreciated and may be made through CanadaHelps.org or by check payable to Tyrconnell Heritage Society, Box 26, Wallacetown, Ontario, NOL 2MO.
Welcome back. We're going to talk about Clacken next. The name Clacken is derived from the description of the topography of the area. The land is gravelly in nature and is a byproduct of the glacial periods. The first group of settlers came in 1820 and all native to Scotland. In the early years, the settlers would float logs down the Thames River to Chatham to be sold. The sales helped tide the families over till they had built their log farmhouses, barns, and cleared the land. These log buildings were built without the use of nails, as nails were scarce and very expensive. The area of Clacken was without a school until the year 1852. Daniel Campbell built a log school on Lot 5 on Martin's Knoll. It had one door, three windows, and a fireplace and chimney made of clay and stone. Inside were wooden benches without backs or desks. The average attendance was 20 pupils. The log school eventually became abandoned when more settlers with large families arrived. A large frame school was built to take in the rising numbers on Black's Lane in 1863. The school became known as Oak Grove School as it was surrounded by oak trees. According to records of John MacLeod, 152 pupils attended the school in 1881. The frame building was later replaced by a two-story brick schoolhouse in 1891. Late in the 1870s, a steam-powered sawmill was established at Clacken. There were two general stores located at the corners. According to the 1865 directory, Clacken had a wagon maker and blacksmith by the name John Campbell, and a blacksmith shop and general store run by William Gill. The first post office was established in 1858 on the west side of the road north of the general store. There's been much discussion and confusion as to where the post office originally stood. On the 1864 Tremaine map, the post office was located on Lot 10, Concession 3. But in the 1877 page map of Aldeburgh Township, it shows the post office at the intersection of the 3rd Concession and the Town Line Road. While in an essay written in the 1890s, Angus MacLean claims the first post office was located on Lot 4, Concession 2. So it's still a mystery. Let's move near the lake to New Glasgow. Colonel Richard Airy, nephew of Colonel Thomas Talbot, drew the original plans for New Glasgow in 1870. At the time, he owned one-third of the entire township of Aldeburgh. Airy used the names of three battles in the Crimean War as street names, Balaclava, Inkerman, and Alma. If you're from St. Thomas, those names probably sound pretty familiar to you. Many settlers immigrated from Scotland, and instead of staying in the Rondeau area, they approached Colonel Talbot and were granted land around New Glasgow. Donald Currie arrived in 1831 and held classes in various homes until a school was built in the area in 1832. The school was also used as the post office, with Currie being the first postmaster. New Glasgow's business section in 1865 was booming. The town had shoemakers, a general store, wagon maker, blacksmith, saw and gristmill, township clerks, justice of the peace, and a hotel. In 1872, the business section had the following: two shoemakers, the Presbyterian church that's still there, the commercial hotel, and a blacksmith. In the 1837 rebellion, it started with all able-bodied men forming a militia. The men brought their own weapons, which ranged from axes, spears, clubs, pitchforks, swords, and muskets. All the men marched to Amherstburg to take part in the conflict. This militia was under the leadership of Colonel George Monroe. The men stayed in Amherstburg for about a month before marching back home. The First Presbyterian Church was built in 1828 west of 16 Mile Creek on Lot 4, Concession 12. The present church was built in 1854 and has served for over 150 years at the time of the writing, but it's still there now. Since the arrival of the Canada Southern Railway and later the Highway 401, the population of New Glasgow dwindled and dropped to around 40 residents. We hope you enjoyed listening to a little snippet about each of the vanished villages of Aldborough, now the municipality of West Elgin. Please join us next week when we talk about the vanished villages of Dutton Dunwich. Thank you for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and follow us on all social media platforms at Bacchus Page House. The Bacchus Page House Museum and Tyrconnell Heritage Society acknowledges the land we are on today as the traditional territory of First Nations people, the Attawandaron and the Iroquois. As settlers at a settler-focused museum, we value both the significant historical and contemporary contributions of all original peoples and ask how we can be supportive in Indigenous cultural renewal. Life in the Talbot Settlement is a production of Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum, funded by the Department of Canadian Heritage. Your host has been Angela Beaubier. Music provided by Jack Whitmer. Thanks to our producer, Caitlin Rietzma. To make a charitable donation and to contact the Bacchus Page House Museum, visit our website, www.bacchuspagehouse.ca. And thank you for listening.